Thanks for tuning in to the Anchored Hope podcast. You can watch our services online at anchoredhope.church.
You know, we've been in the middle of a series, if you're just joining us, called While You Are Waiting. And what we're talking about is this question right here, is what do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when you enter into a season and there's a brand new normal? All of a sudden, you're put in a situation where there's no light at the end of the tunnel. You don't know how long this is going to last. You don't know how long you're going to be in the middle of this season. And it doesn't look like it's going to go away anytime soon. For the time being, this is how it's going to be. What do you do in the middle of those situations? What do you do when you're given that new normal? And I think that Dustin's diagnosis of Crohn's disease is perfect. And it really shows that for every single one of us, we've all been in one of these seasons, or one day we will be. And for every single one of us, it's going to look a little bit differently. But Dustin's example is perfect. Just like how we talked about with Paul last week, he prayed for God to take this away, but the answer was no. The answer was, you're going to have this. This is not going to go away. You're going to learn how to deal with this new normal. And in the midst of those times, there's three lies that we start to tell ourselves. And those three lies are this. The three lies are, I'll never be happy again. Nothing good can come from this. There's really not even any point in continuing. In the midst of these new normals, our joy starts to become depleted. Our hope is depleted. Our sense of purpose is depleted. And so we've been in the middle of the series trying to figure out what it is that we do in the midst of these stories. And so we've been looking at kind of the sadder stories in the Bible. The stories don't end with a happy ending, that don't end with Jesus coming in and rescuing everybody or bringing anyone back to life. And so the first week we talked about John the Baptizer, one of the cousins of Jesus, who was sent to jail and sat in jail for a year and a half and asked Jesus to help him. And Jesus said, no, I can't. I'm sorry. I there's too much at stake. There's greater good that's happening here. I can't save you, John. And we know that John's story ended in death, but he also, in Jesus' book, went down as the greatest man that ever lived. And then we talked about last week, we talked about Paul. You remember we talked about Paul? Paul the bounty hunter. Paul, who at one point went to the government and asked permission, got a license to hunt Christians down. But then he had a moment with God, and all of a sudden his life was turned around. All of a sudden he became a follower of Jesus. And then just when he started to do everything right, just when he started to walk in the light and do what God had called him to do, all of a sudden he was met with this physical affliction. And we don't know a whole lot about it, but what we do know is this, is that it was painful, it was humiliating, it was debilitating, and it was permanent. It stopped him in his tracks. He could no longer even do the ministry that he was called to do. And we talked about last week how Paul said in his letter that three times, three different points in his life, it got so debilitating that he asked God to take it away from him. But God's answer was no. But what did Paul do when the answer was no? Paul says that Jesus' answer to him was that God's grace was sufficient and that God's power was made perfect in weakness. And so he said, you know what I'm going to do? Instead of giving up, I'm going to continue to move forward, because you know what? God's power is made perfect in weakness. And so I'm just going to learn to lean on him and believe that his grace is all that I need, that his grace is sufficient for the burden that I have on me. And so we find Paul in the midst of these situations. And you know, Paul goes as far to say this. He goes as far to say that we can find contentment in the midst of an unpleasant new normal. Now, this kind of became what Paul was almost known for. As he begins on this journey and begins to think about this, he starts to use this word contentment and begins to preach about it and to speak about it and to take his story, his experience, and his circumstances and apply it to everyone's new normals. You know, contentment is about being at peace. It's about being at peace on the inside, even though everything on the outside is crazy. It's about being okay inside, even though the world outside is definitely not okay. So now, before you give up on me, before you scroll away, before you go, contentment, Not listening to this message. There's not a chance that I'm going to listen to a message that's going to tell me that I need to find contentment, that I need to find a way to be content in the midst of the difficult situation that I'm going through right now. Pastor, you don't know my story. You don't know my experience. You don't know what I've been through. You've never been through anything like what I'm going through. And hey, I want to tell you right now, I understand all of that. There are things that I can empathize with, but there are some things I just can't sympathize with because I haven't been through what you've been through. Your experience is totally different than mine. But real quick, I want to talk to you about the alternative. I want to talk to you about the alternative of contentment. The alternative of contentment would be to be discontent. And so here's the thing. I want you to hang on for just a second. Because if you're thinking you can't be content in the midst of this new normal, in the midst of what you're going through right now, the alternative is discontentment. And here's the thing I know about you to be true, because I think it'd be true of all of us, is that you do not want to live a life of discontentment. Because when you are discontent, it throws gasoline on the fire of I'll never be happy again, nothing good can come from this, and there's no point in continuing on. You and I both know that discontentment leads to unwise decisions. It leads to failure. It leads to temptation. It leads to weakness. It leads to giving in to whatever is available to you. It leads to reaching out to things that you have never reached out to before. And you and I both know a story or two where discontentment led to a failed marriage, a failed relationship with kids, a failed financial situation, the end of a career. And so if you're not with me, if you're thinking you can't be content in the middle of this situation, the only alternative is discontentment. And I think you and I can both agree on this, that discontentment is going to lead you down a road that is not going to put you where you want to be. So I want you to hang on for just a minute. I want you to listen. I want you to hold on to the end. I want you to hear Paul's words and to hear what he says about being content, because discontentment is not the way that we want to go. And so we're going to look at a little bit of Paul's message, but before we do, I want to get into the context that Paul is in. So in the middle of Acts, in Acts chapter 21, it's Luke who writes this book, and it's kind of a historical document about what happened to the apostles and to Paul after Jesus ascended into heaven, what kind of the first generation church actually looks like. And so in Acts 21, what we see a couple men that kind of stir up trouble for Paul. And in the midst of this trouble, they kind of bring up trumped up charges on him, and he ends up getting arrested. But the thing is that they can't do anything about it. They can't put him on trial, and they can't sentence him to anything because Paul is a Roman citizen. And as a Roman citizen, he had a lot of different advantages against people. And so all that they could do is to send him on his way through the Roman court system. So that's exactly what they did. They begin to send Paul through the Roman court system. And then all of a sudden, he actually does what is the right of every Roman citizen. He wants to plead to Caesar's court. And so again, he kind of, you know, pleads that he wants to be in front of Caesar's court. And so they say, okay, that's fine. That's the right of every Roman citizen. And so they put him in jail. And so when we catch up with Paul in his letters, we have witnessed that Paul has traveled 1,500 miles through five different groups or court systems, and now he's been waiting in jail to appeal his case to Caesar's court, and he's been in jail for 4 years. And what do you think he does? He's traveled all this way. He's been put through a terrible circumstance, unfairly, might I add, and now he's sat in jail for 4 years. So what does he do? He decides to start writing letters. That's what he does. So he asked for a scribe, and he begins to dictate these letters through this scribe. And these letters are going to be sent to all of the first churches that Paul helped establish, that he was kind of a mentor to. And so these became known as the prison epistles, and they're found in your New Testament Bible. And he wrote letters to all of these different churches. He wrote letters to the Ephesians, to the Philippians, to the Colossians. And as he writes them, he wants to give them encouraging words, but he also takes his story and his circumstances, and he wants to give them hope and joy and purpose. He's combating the three lies that he's probably telling himself. but also that each of us here in the midst of our new normals. And just for a minute, I want you to think about this. In the midst of this new normal, in the midst and a point in time where most of us would give up, Paul decides, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of this moment. I'm not going to let this stop my ministry. This doesn't mean I'm done just because I'm rotting away in this jail. You know what? I'm going to move forward and I'm going to write these churches. Now, think for just a minute about these letters that he wrote. Do you think for a minute that he could have comprehended that he was writing a document that was going to be saved for 2,000 years? That he was writing a document that was going to be saved and shared, and that it would revolutionize Western civilization? That he was writing documents that would eventually help overthrow the Roman Empire, and that he was writing documents that would help Gentiles come to Christ for the very first time? That it would change how people thought about God and their theology, and that it would be discussed in classrooms thousands of years later? Do you think for a minute Paul could have comprehended the impact that he was going to have on the world? I doubt he did. But how incredible is that? That in his moment, simply choosing to write a handful of letters changed the world, changed lives. You know what? He had no idea what hung in the balance. But the truth is that what hung in the balance is you and I and millions of other people's relationship with Christ. Now, I want you to look up here for just a second, okay? I want you to pay attention. We got this special camera just right here so I can be right up in your face, because I want you to hear this good news, okay? You have no idea what or who hangs in the balance of your biggest decisions. In the midst of your new normal, in the midst of what you are going through, you have no idea. In those moments where you have to choose to be faith-filled, when everything around you is to say, be faithless, you have no idea what or who hangs in the balance. When you're in those moments where you are tempted to be discontent, where you just want to give up, where you don't want to move forward, where you're like, there's no point in continuing. I'll never be happy again. There's no good that can come from this. I want to give up. Don't give up. In the midst of those moments, right then, when you're in the middle of them, when you're in the thick of them, there are people, there are relationships, there is stuff hanging in the balance that you'll never understand in your lifetime. But you not giving up, you choosing to be faith-filled instead of faithless, can be a huge game changer for the rest of the world, for the people around you. You have no idea what God may be up through in the midst of this new normal. You've got to hang in there. So if you find yourself, in one of those moments where you want to give up and you feel like God is absent, God is apathetic, God is angry, just know that God is up to something in the background, something that you may never, ever understand. And you and I, if you have been following Jesus long enough, you know that in those moments, that is when God does his greatest work. That is when God does something incredible. And so it's our decision. Again, it's an option. I'm not going to tell you you have to. Just like I said last week, I'm not mean. I'm not commanding you to do anything. I'm just telling you it's an option. Your options are to be content or to be discontent, to hold on or to give up. And I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm telling you it's an option. And it's your best option, in my opinion, because discontentment leads nowhere good. So it's your option to say, God, I didn't choose this. I don't want this. But I know you can use this. I know this isn't from you, but I believe, God, that you can repurpose this, that I can be happy again, that something good can come from this, that you can do something incredible in my life. So God, here I am. And that's exactly what Paul chose to do. And so simply by getting a scribe and writing letters, he begins to write and he begins to send out these letters. And one of these letters he actually got something back from. It was to the Philippians. And so this is what Paul tells us in Philippians chapter 4. He's writing them after he's received something from them. And so this is what he says. He says, "I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it." So what Paul is saying is he's obviously wrote a letter, or he received a care package from them, and he says, "Hey, man, wow, I am so happy that I got this care package from you guys." You know, as we've talked about with John the Baptist, during those times when you were in jail, you were only kept alive by your friends. The jail didn't feed you. They didn't take care of you. As far as they cared, it would be great if you had died in jail. And so the only way you stayed alive were through care packages from people. And so he receives his care package from the Philippians. He said, "I'm so glad I got your care package. You know, it had some essential oils. I got the dumbbell. I got the Cheetos. I got the magazines. Really appreciative of it. It was a really great care package." And he says, I'm so great that you renewed your concern for me." And then he says, "I'm not saying this because I'm in need." He's setting up what he's about to say next. He says, "Look, I want you to know, I am not in need. I am not writing you because I need anything. I'm not writing you because I'm freaking out or that I'm troubled. I just want to preface what I'm going to say next with this. I'm doing quite well. Then he says this. He says, "I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned." Now, let's take a time out just for a minute. This is so important for you. This might be your takeaway for today. For I have learned. Is anybody watching the documentary on ESPN about the Chicago Bulls right now? It's a very, very good little mini documentary about the Chicago Bulls. But anytime you're talking about my Chicago Bulls, of course you're going to talk about Michael Jordan, right? And if you know anything, you know, my opinion, we could debate about this a little bit, but Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time. But here's the thing about Michael Jordan, and they talk about this in the documentary. Michael Jordan was not the best because he was naturally talented. You know, there's so many stories about how Michael Jordan couldn't even get on his high school basketball team, how he failed again and again and again. But here's what everybody agrees on. Michael Jordan was the GOAT because he was obsessed with being the best. And he was so obsessed with being the best that he was about practicing. When he started to get pushed around and he was a little light and guys started to muscle into him, he's like, "We have to have a plan." So he went to the weight room. He started to put on muscle. He started bulking up so that he could push back. I mean, Michael Jordan was obsessed, and so he practiced and he practiced and he practiced and he practiced. That's how Michael Jordan became Michael Jordan. Here's the thing. Paul did not become Paul because he was naturally talented. Paul did not become Paul because of anything magical. Paul became Paul because he put in the practice, because he learned, because he was so obsessed with being like Jesus that anytime he got an opportunity to flex his muscles, to practice, to push himself, to go a little bit further, to understand grace a little bit more, to understand mercy a little bit more, to be a little bit more loving, he took a hold of that opportunity and he learned how to be like Jesus. Now here's the thing, man. Here's the great news that's in that, is that you can be like Paul. You can have faith like Paul. These apostles, these people, Paul didn't even walk with Jesus. He didn't even get to see Jesus. He didn't even have the advantages that Peter and Luke and Matthew and Mark, all of them had. He was just this guy who heard the stories and understood it the way you and I do. And look, 2,000 years later, we're still talking about this guy. 2,000 years later, we're writing his letters that he wrote in prison. This is something to be learned through practice. And it's something that you can learn. It's something that you can develop. It's something that God can bring out in you. But it's not just going to happen through magic or through just all of a sudden. It's not going to happen. But it can be learned. And that's what God wants to do in you. And then he shares the big word with us. He says, "For I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances." I have learned to be content, no matter what the circumstances are. Wow. I mean, come on. Isn't that awesome? I mean, you know what contentment means, right? Contentment means this. It means to be at peace inside when it's not peaceful outside. It means to be okay when everything is definitely not okay.
I mean, come on. If there was a class and this was its end result, if there was a class out there that said, look, if you want to learn how to be content in a semester, this is our course material. We're going to learn to be okay on the inside when everything on the outside is not okay. We're going to learn to be at peace inside when everything around us is not at peace. And when the world is mad, we're going to be glad. I mean, if that was a class, wouldn't you sign up for that? Wouldn't you at least be curious? So here's the thing. If you have given up on God, or if you have doubted God, look, doesn't it at least make you curious when a man like Paul, who sat in jail for 4 years, says that he learned a way to be content in all circumstances? Doesn't that at least make you want to question whether God is real, whether his promises are real, whether his the life that he offers is true? Doesn't it make you at least want to explore it? Doesn't it at least make you want to jump in? Doesn't it at least make you want to go, you know what? Maybe that's possible in my life. I've always struggled with being discontent. I've always struggled with being kind of pushed whichever way the waves or the wind push me. You know what? I would love to find that in my life. And maybe it's something I can learn. Maybe it's something that I can put into practice and that I can have in my own life. Maybe this is possible for me. Look, if it was possible for Paul, it's possible for you too, to find a way to be content in your life. And then he uses a word that's not used anywhere else in the Bible. As he continues his letter, he says this next. He says, I know what it is like to be in need, and I know what it's like to have plenty. He's setting us up for what he's about to tell us next. And goes, look, guys, come on. My experience, you know that it's valid. You know that this is legit. You know my story. You know that I've been stoned. I've been put in prison. I've been chased. I've been abandoned. My friends have turned on me. People haven't trusted me. You know my story. I know what it's like to have good days and bad days. And then he says this next. He says, I know what it's like to be in need, and I know what it's like to have plenty, for I have learned the secret. Now, this word secret in the Greek is not found anywhere else in the Bible. This word secret means to be initiated into a secret society, or quite honestly, a cult. It's why it was a cultural word. It was kind of meant to be a bit cultish. And this word isn't found anywhere else, but this is what Paul's saying. He goes, I have found the secret. I've been initiated into something that's kind of secretive, that's kind of mysterious, that's hard to comprehend. He says, I have learned the secret of being content in any, in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or having want. I have found this all out, and I know the secret to success. I know how to be content in my life. And then this is what he says next. He says, I can do all this. Do what? What is all this? I can be stoned. I can be given this physical affliction that has stopped me in my tracks so many different times in my life. I can be single. I mean, come on, all the single people, wave your hand in the air like you just don't care, right? Paul was single. He understood what that was like. He goes, I can be single. I can have this physical affliction. My friends have abandoned me. Some of the apostles have left me. Some people have disagreed with me. I have been put in jail for four years. I've been thrown through court. I've gone through all of this. And you know what? I can do it all. I can do all of this. I want you to look at me for a second. Look, there are things you're going through in your life right now where you're going, I can't do this. How many times in your life have you told yourself, I can't do this. I can't continue on. I can't do this. Look, you need to tell yourself right now, either out loud or in your mind, I can do all this. I can do this. I can be a single parent. I can be a single dad. I can balance my job and my career. I can be a great mom. I can be a great dad. I can be a great husband. I can be a great wife. All the different roles that I feel, all the different holes that I fill, all the things that I'm juggling right now, I can do all this. I can be content and I can do it all. Watch me. I can do it all. You need to tell yourself that right now, because that lie inside of you that's told you I can't do this is a lie. You can do this. I can do all this. And how does Paul say he can do it? He says, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Now I'm going to add a word here, all right? Because Paul, he takes this in his other letters and he begins to kind of flesh it out. And so I want to add this word. I can do all this through him who gives me his strength. Because Paul clarifies in his other letters later, it is not your strength that's going to make you get through this. It is his strength. It is his power made perfect in weakness. It is his strength that actually makes us strong. I can do all things through him who gives me his strength. There is a mystery for Christians. For those of us who choose to follow Jesus, there is a strength and endurance that Jesus gives us. Paul's word secret is perfect because it's unexplainable. It's not something that's just handed to you for you to take apart. It's something that mysteriously appears inside of you. You don't know it until you come against a trial or you come against hardship and you notice, hey, look, I did a little bit better that time. I was a little bit tougher. That didn't throw me for a loop like it had in the past. Man, you know what? I think I'm getting stronger. I think I have found something. I think I have found this mysterious, secret way of being content no matter what the circumstances are, whether I'm hungry or I'm filled, whether I'm needing or if I want nothing. You know what? I have found the secret to being content. And it's something that I didn't do in myself. But it's something that Christ is doing in me. Now, I want to talk about this verse a little bit because it's so easy to take this verse out of context. You know, you've heard this verse, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. You've heard this so many times. But you know what? Typically in our culture, the reason that we know this verse, the reason that we hear this verse is, you know, it's all well-meaning. And I'm not meaning to be mean, but I see it all the times. Athletes use it. Sports teams use it, right? The football guy, you know, they run through the tunnel and they've got a banner that has this Philippians 4:13 on it, you know, and then, you know, the team wins and the QB runs with, you know, scripture verse painted on his, you know, his under his eyes and they go, hey, well, how'd the game go? And he goes, well, you know, God, Christ gives me strength, so I knew we were going to win the game, all right? That's how we see that played out so many times. But here's the thing. I want you to understand the context of this verse real quick, okay? This verse is not about winning. It's about losing. This verse is not about things going well. It's about when things go bad. And I mean this all in grace and wellness. God doesn't care that much about your football game, okay? Here's what God cares about. God cares about when you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And when you get handed a no, when you find out you're going to go through something that's not going to be easy and that you're not going to win, he wants you to know that you can still survive. This verse, I can do all this through Christ who gives me strength. This is about holding on to hope. This is about still being able to have joy in the midst of a situation that is not joy-filled. This is about still being able to find purpose when it seems like there is no purpose in the midst of this. This is what this verse is about. This verse is about surviving. It's about thriving under circumstances that normal people could not be able to thrive under. This is not a verse to use when you win. This is a verse to use when you feel like you are a loser. This is the verse you turn to when things are the hardest they've ever been, where you can say, look, even though I'm in the midst of this, I can do all of this through Christ who gives me strength. I know I can, and I'm going to, because his power is made perfect in weakness, and I am a survivor. Even though I'm going to lose this battle, I'm going to act like a winner, and I'm going to thrive. I'm going to have hope. I'm going to find purpose. Something good is going to come out of this. And you know why this is so important? This is so important to learn. Because as we've been talking about this whole time, I want you to be able to use this formula. I want you to be able to say, you know what? Here's the thing. I can't, but he can. And so he can through me. I can't, but he can. And so you know what that means? He can through me. You know what? In the midst of your difficult situation right now, where you're going, you know what? I cannot find it within myself to forgive them. I cannot right now, I cannot find it within myself to forgive them. Well, you know what? I know you can't, but he can, which means he can through you. When you're going through something difficult relationally, when you're going through something messed up in your marriage, and you're like, man, I can't do this. You know what? You're right. You can't, but he can. And that means he can through you. And you're going through something hard, whatever you've been handed, if you've been handed a difficult financial situation, you've been handed something from your doctor, something going on with your health. You know what, man? All of us through this COVID-19 thing, some of us have been said, hey, guess what? You're going to continue your career. You're going to be a parent. You're going to be a teacher. You're going to do all of these things. And also, hey, by the way, you also need to take care of yourself. Here's all your different new jobs you're going to fulfill for your entire family. And you know what? You probably looked at that and go, I can't do this. You know what? Yes, you can. You can do all of this. But you can't by yourself. But he can. Which means he can through you. This is so important because at the end of your life, this is what we want to hear. At the end of your life, when your story is just a story to tell, you want them to have a good story to tell. You know what? At the end of your life, when you're there, what you don't want them to say is, man, they were always discontent. When the world got bad, when the world got tough, when our situation changed just a little bit, when all of a sudden we had to wear masks to the grocery store and we had to work from home and mom had to, you know, read to me a little bit more and had to work with me a little bit more and couldn't take me to daycare, couldn't take me to school. Man, anytime that happened, man, mom was discontent. Dad was discontent. Their marriage got messed up. Everything just kind of fell apart. You don't want that to be the story that they tell about you. You want a good story to tell. You know what you want your story to be? When your story is just a story to tell, they want to say, man, even when things got hard, they found a way to be content. They found a way to still have joy. They had found a way to still have hope. They had a way to still find purpose. And they held on. They were full of faith. And they didn't just survive it. Man, they thrived. When hard stuff came, mom, dad, they picked themselves up. They got ready. They flexed their muscles. And man, they just pulled us all together. They gave us so much hope. We were never, ever scared. Because mom and dad, my brother and sister, my friend, man, they were never scared. You want that to be the story that they tell. The story of how when you were thrown difficult adversity, you found a way to be content. And I know you can do that. But here's the thing. It ain't going to happen through a prayer. It ain't going to happen through, you know, some kind of, you know, magical thing happened all of a sudden. It's going to happen through a learned thing. It's going to happen over time. It's going to happen through a life that leans on Jesus and allows his power to be perfected in the midst of your weakness. It's leaning on his grace. That is how we find contentment. And you can learn it, and you can do it. I know you can. And when you do, one day when your story is just a story to tell, they are gonna have such a good story. It's possible to learn, but not on your own, but through him. You can't, but he can. Which means he can through you. Let me pray for you today. God, this morning, I thank you so much for this message from Paul. As Paul learned this in his life, God, I pray that we would learn it in ours. God, would you in us, as our hearts stir, as we are tempted to be discontent, God, every single one of us can agree that being discontent is somewhere where we don't want to be. That discontentment is going to lead us down a path of being unwise, of other failures, and that's not what we want to see. So God, would you reveal to us the secret of being content, just as you did with Paul? Would you show us to be content, how to be content in all circumstances, Lord? And would you help us to learn this every single day? Would you help us to learn it this week as we enter a new phase, as things start to open up, but still the situation of COVID-19 is still around us. Would you help us to learn contentment, Lord, so that when our story is a story to tell, we have a good story for them to tell. God, we thank you and we pray these things in your name. Amen.
If you're ready to take next steps we'd love it if you'd visit anchoredhope.church. And if you'd like to support this church's mission in leading people to a growing relationship with Jesus, we'd love it if you'd make a donation at anchoredhope.church/give.